Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Super Deluxe Gamescast. It's Thursday, February the 8th. As you can see, if you are watching us here on video, I have a brand new setup here. I got a much more powerful camera. I actually have a whole new PC that I built myself, and Derek was a huge help in getting that going for me. So
we've still got a lot of setup stuff to do, but
we do. But hey, Derek, I was able to run a stream last night.
Yeah, considering you had no computer over the weekend, like what was it, Friday or Saturday that everything blew up?
Yeah, so fucking sparks came out of one of the ports of my PC. And there was like a faint burning smell. So I was like, well, I'm going to unplug that from the wall. And
fine.
Me not being the computer PC guru, I basically called Derek and was like, Derek, is it supposed to do that? Or is that something?
Let me consult the book. Nope. Turns out, no. Sparks and burning smell are bad.
Derek, I think this is bad. Not sure this is supposed to be happening.
John, see, what happens is that means that the tiny genie inside of your computer that makes it run has died, and that was his soul escaping is what you smelled. And unfortunately, that does mean that your computer is a hazard to everyone around it. New computer, though.
I got a new PC. I'm still playing with, like, you know, the camera distance and stuff like that. I was kind of going for a more studio look here, but I also, you know, like, am I too far away from the camera? But these are all things that I'll
work on over time.
Yeah. Gentlemen, so smaller podcast tonight, but you know what? Tonight we're a threesome. We're having a threesome tonight.
No.
Here on SDGC.
I'm the only one allowed to make that joke, and I'm not making that joke, so.
Just the boys, the homies sitting around having a threesome about video games, talking about Xbox.
Three hots and a cot.
I really don't like the insistence on continuing this.
All right, so guys, it's been a, how do I put this?
A clusterfuck.
Strange and interesting week.
Sure.
So, and we're going to get into all this stuff because much of it is beyond funny.
We're actually here to host a funeral for the entire company of Microsoft, as it is going out of business, as we all know.
And it's going to be a 7-hour Twitter space.
yeah, absolutely. But you know what? First, we're going to talk about what the shit we've been playing. And if you guys don't mind, actually, you know what, Derek? No. I won't go first this time. Derek, why don't you kick us off?
Sure. Bustin has already requested to go last, so I guess me, you, then him.
Okay. All right. All right. Kick off the threesome for us.
So here's the deal. The only thing I've been playing for the last week is Persona 3 Reload.
Oh, are you liking it?
I have opinions. So I'm trying to think of a good way. Let me give some background first, right? I am a tremendous Persona fan, right? Like I truly love Persona. Like Persona 4, I played a little of Persona 3 FES back on the PlayStation 2. And I couldn't get far into it. Not being able to control your party members was a deal breaker for me. I just couldn't. But Persona 4 was one of my favorite games of all time. Deeply love it. It holds a very special place in my heart. Persona 5, incredible. So the idea of a Persona 3 remake, a full-blown remake, you know, I'm like, okay, let me go back to this one that many people hype up as being the best in the franchise by like a mile. It's so much the most mature and the most like heavy and most meaningful of these games. It makes the other ones look like kiddie shit by comparison. Okay, cool. So I got Persona 3 Reload. And I really like the game. I am going to preface this with the fact that I am a quarter to a third of the way through, right? I am not far enough in to have hit some of the plot twists, but the feeling I'm getting is, are you guys sure? Are you guys sure that this is that big of a difference from Personas 4 and 5? Because...
Well, I heard they got rid of, like, the weird anti-trans shit.
Well, yeah, there's in particular, like, a now famous, like, transphobic scene on it. I haven't gotten to that. And I don't really remember the original, because, again, I didn't get that far in Persona 3 when I played it back on the PS2. I am very happy to see Persona... and see Atlas work on being better about that stuff, because each of the modern Persona games has a little bit of shit in it that needs to not be there. In regards to LGBT folks, apparently, you know, one of the lead writers is famously very ignorant about this kind of shit. And it's just like,
and they have kind of
for a while
changed some of this stuff for a while. They have had several opportunities with several re-releases.
I mean, look at Catherine,
like
right? Which comes from the same team and the same writer and famously has.
Yeah, so that is the, so Catherine is the same writer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Same team. And like that one is frustrating for me because I thought they had a really good with that re-release that they did. They had a good opportunity to go back and adjust some stuff, and they just made it worse.
Yeah, they made it so much worse with the new character. I'm happy for all of that. My thought process is like Persona 3 is a good time. I think people who are looking for more Persona, like, this is very slick. It is a fantastic, basically very faithful from everything I'm reading remake. I think maybe even faithful to its detriment, because like there's only three social stats: academics, charm, and courage, as opposed to the like five you normally see in later Persona games. And like that feels a little bit simple. A lot of the options of things to do out, you know, in the actual time management feel very uneven in a way that feels like an older PS2 game where they hadn't thought this stuff through as much. But like, even so, I enjoy it. And maybe more is going to happen later in the plot of this game that is going to really change my mind. But as of right now, I'm like, okay, this is like a decent cast of characters that I like and wish I could spend more time with, which sucks because none of the social links are around your cast members, it turns out. Like, if you want to get to know Junpei better, too bad, you can't. You're only going to get the story content. That's a weird choice. Instead, I get social links like the annoying kid in class who lies about fucking his teacher. Cool. Love that. Like, so many of Persona 3, so many of Persona 3 social links are like, hey, what if there was like a dude you didn't like and you didn't want to spend time with him? And we made you. How would that feel? And the answer is not very good. There's a dude who's like a heavier guy. He's like the moon social link. He's the gourmet king or whatever, and he's like a you know, he's obsessed with food and he's an expert.
I think the term is gourmand.
Yeah, whatever. But like I think that his weight is played a little bit for laughs. Like, in terms of, like, he, like, looks down on thin people a lot, and also, like, his shirt is untucked and, like, can't tuck itself all the way in, and you could see his belly pushing out, and it's a little, like, I don't like this too much.
It's a little tropey.
It's a little, but also, like, he's just a douchebag, and I don't want to, there's the fucking, like, student council, like, disciplinary committee dude who's just a shitty cop. And to progress his social link, you basically have to be like, I do agree. All of the children are degenerates. You know, I do long for a time when our nation was great. Like, it's just a lot. Like, there's some good, don't get me wrong, there are great social links in Persona 3, but like, I'm just keep running into like the game being like, hey man, we got a new social link for you. You ready for this? Are you ready for this? You're going to fucking hate this one. We got a real all time stinker for you. Oh, this next one, that's an 11-year-old girl and you get to hang out with her alone and take her out for burgers while she talks about her parents' divorce and like potentially compelling storyline. Don't really like my 16 or 17 year old protagonist taking an 11-year-old girl out unsupervised for burgers. Feels a little weird.
I think honestly the big takeaway from Persona 3 for me is this: there's absolutely going to be a remake of 4.
Yeah. Oh, there is. Oh yeah, one of the social links in 3 is getting groomed by your teacher. Which
isn't
like
that a link in 5 too?
It is. But like 3's even worse about it. I don't know how to tell you that 3 is much worse about the grooming than 5 is. I like the cast. Yes, the old couple who runs the bookstore, love them. Will fight for their life. But it's like it's fine. You can tell that Persona 3 needed mechanically to evolve and become more complex, and that's where 4 and 5 really succeeded, is putting that package together better. There is a part of me that wonders if maybe, because people always say like Persona 3 is the heavy one. It deals with like bullying and suicide and like, you know, all of these heavier topics. And it's like 4 and 5 did too, man. Like, is 3 really that much more mature than the others? Or is it the one where they shoot themselves in the head with a fake gun to summon a persona, right? Like, is it the mature one or is it the edgy one? I don't know. I haven't seen the plot progress enough. But look, I don't mean to come on here and put down Persona 3 Reload.
That's what you've been doing, Derek. You've been shitting all over Persona.
I do really like it. And if you want more Persona, it's a really good Persona. Just go in knowing that it is like mechanically and structurally, I feel like a step backwards from 4 and 5. It's probably still the best way to play Persona 3, especially once the data mined, you know, the answer DLC comes out that gets the FES content from the original. But don't go in. I think
they just release a full Persona game.
Well, okay. So because Persona 3, the DLC thing that's coming later was an expansion that came later to Persona 3.
What I mean is like
what we've got now,
Persona 4 Golden, then Persona 5 and Persona 5 Royal. And, you know, Persona 3 and Persona 3 FES.
At least this time it's a DLC and they're not making you buy a $70 game a second time, right? Like,
you know what I'm saying, though?
But whatever. Like, it's games get DLC, John. I don't know what to tell you. As long as they're DLC and not full price re-releases. Like,
yeah, that was the thing that always really got me about it. It's like, it's one thing if you want to do a DLC and, you know, have some updates over time. That's great. But yeah, the fact that it was like, hey, guess what? Here's the real version of the game
play Royal because I put so much time into Persona 5 and then Royal comes out and it wasn't like a DLC I could buy. It was like buy a new game and start over entirely. I was like, fuck that.
The best part of Royal isn't even the extra stuff at the end. It's Morgana not forcing you to go to fucking sleep every night.
Yeah. But the thing about the Persona 3 Reload is still a good time. It could not be more obvious that a Persona 4 remake is on the way. They can reuse a shitload of assets from Persona 3.
I would be stunned if it hasn't already been in development.
Persona 3 Reload apparently was finished like 2 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago. And it basically just sat and waited because they needed more time for localization. Which is, it's a fantastic localization, and I love the new voice acting. But, like, Persona 4 Remake might be farther along than people think.
Oh, I'm sure it is. Oh, now, I will say Persona 3 Remake, from a visual standpoint, looks great.
Oh, it's a gorgeous game. It is easily the prettiest the franchise has ever looked. And I like...
It's the fastest the franchise has ever sold.
I like... Yeah, it's like a million, despite being on Game Pass, right? A million sales in the first, what, week or
Persona
two?
Persona 6 is going to be huge, Derek. Persona 6.
If it ever releases. It makes me curious about this Metaphor game that they're coming out with.
I'm really interested in that myself.
Yeah. I mean, I'm excited to see what Atlas and Sega keep doing with this franchise. Persona 3 Reload, to me, as somebody who loves Persona and has never really gotten into 3, and so this is like basically a new game to me, I'm coming back in like missing a lot of the stuff from 4 and 5 that I really liked. Also, all of the singers sound like they just downed 3 cups of Sleepy Time tea before they went to lay down a lyric track. So I don't know why the music is both better and worse than the originals. It's really difficult to do, but they pulled it off.
Cool. Derek, you got anything else you want to mention before I go?
Persona 3 Reload. I've spent way too much time talking about it. I apologize. All right.
No, why are you apologizing?
Because
I've got other things to apologize for. That isn't one of them. So, by the way, Derek, I checked my mail. I never got any weird egg-related shit from you, so maybe you, I guess you were telling the truth.
I told you. You check your mail because you're supposed to check your mail every day.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, right. Okay, so last night I streamed a demo of a horror game on Steam called Hollow Body. And it is very evocative of old school Resident Evil and Silent Hill. And I played it for about an hour. You know, the demo is about an hour long. I fucking loved it. I loved every minute of it. If you like Resident Evil or Silent Hill, you need to, not right now, finish listening to the podcast, but after we're done, go to Steam and download this shit immediately. It is so reverential to especially Silent Hill. Like, you're actually in an apartment complex. And so, Derek, it's actually Silent Hill, but in like a cyberpunk Blade Runner-esque world. And it's got some really cool shit it does with its HUD. And this is all being developed by one person. And the full release is actually apparently fairly soon. So go play Hollow Body. It's fucking awesome. The demo, at least. Now, I mean, like, you know, the whole game could completely fall apart in the end once we get the full release. But this went from me not knowing any... Like, yesterday morning, I didn't know it existed. And this morning I woke up, it's one of my most anticipated games this year. That's how much I loved it.
Okay.
It's fucking phenomenal. I have also been replaying Live Alive. One of my favorite games ever. I won't sit here and wax poetic about it. I fucking love everything there is to love about that game. And I also played the Final Fantasy VII Rebirth demo. I streamed that as well. And boy, oh boy, Derek, are we in for a fucking treat.
I bet. I mean, I don't see how it comes out and is bad. I just don't.
So we have seen countless interpretations of the Nibelheim flashback, right?
Sure.
We saw it in Final Fantasy VII. We saw it in Crisis Core. Before Crisis. We've seen it in multiple avenues. This is the best it's ever been interpreted ever. You get a look at the map. You get like a brief look at the world map, and it is fucking ginormous. It plays just like Final Fantasy VII Remake, which is a very good thing because Final Fantasy VII Remake has an incredible combat system. Playing as Sephiroth is very, very cool. He's super OP. Like, you're going to just blaze through everything. I mean, it's Sephiroth. But there are fan theories already flowing all over the place about what's actually happening here. And so I'm not going to get in on that.
Bro, people doing fan theories, like internet, like pre-release theories about Nomura games is not as bad as pre-release theories about Kojima games, but it's up there, like, in terms of my inability to handle it.
For Nomura, this is very not as belt buckly as you're used to.
I like to play a game with when talking about, like, because people are just like, oh, well, what are they going to change up? And are talking about, like, hey, what would be a cool different way to change things up with the Final Fantasy VII story? I like to play the game. It's like, well, what is the worst thing that they could possibly do? I think I've come up with it. Okay, so it's so at the end where we do get the scene where Sephiroth descends from the sky on Aerith. However, Aerith just kills him in a cutscene and then is revealed to be the real villain.
That is, dude, you know, some fucking middle schooler is sitting down and wrote that exact thing out, and they're like, this shit is so fire! Square Enix, hire me!
And then Nomura saw it online and was like, oh, we could do that?
We could
That's
do it.
Crazy good!
Yeah, so I think that would be the worst possible thing that they could do.
Here's something, I mentioned this in chat just now, but I want to... They did a really good job of making Sephiroth seem like a super nice, chill guy before he loses his shit. Like, he's very supportive of Cloud. He, like, saves Tifa's life. Like, he pats Cloud on the... He pats Cloud on the shoulder. He's like, all right, man, go get some rest. We're busy in the morning. And I'm like... And knowing what happens, I'm like, Sephiroth, why are you... No.
That's something that needs to happen, though, because it's, like... the flashbacks of Sephiroth in the original game, even then, he's the most, like, obviously the villain motherfucker.
Yeah. Like, we do already know he's the villain, but yeah. Even if we didn't, we would know he is the villain.
Like, look at this mysterious man in black with a huge sword.
It'd be like if fucking Anakin was just Darth Vader all through the prequel movies.
I look all evil and shit, but I'm actually quite sweet.
So it's a good call for them to like try and show a like pre-evil version of this character, before terribly off the rails for him.
I just want to say I see journalist extraordinaire Grant Stoner in chat, and I don't know why he's not speaking up, because we always like to hear from Grant.
Maybe he's just having a good time. Maybe he's busy. Maybe he's working. Maybe he's just listening.
Is he doing a journalism? He might be doing a journalism.
He could be.
But yeah, no. So I am extremely excited about what Square, like, this feels like Square Enix at a level they haven't been in a very long time. I'm just as excited about this as I was about Final Fantasy 16. He is journalisming.
Called it. Told you.
He's journalisming.
Yeah, he's journalisming.
That doesn't sound right. Oh my god, I'm never mind.
Shut the fuck up.
Oh my god, you're gonna make me journalism. All right, nope. That's what I got. Justin, go ahead.
Okay, so I'm going to start with a new release and then a project that has been going on for a while. So,
like Project Scorpio?
Literally, yes. Well, okay, actually, not quite. Not quite literally, but similarly. So first, I tried out some of Helldivers 2 today.
Oh, I forgot that was out.
Yeah, it just came out today. I'm really, really enjoying what I've played so far. I played a bit of the first game. I didn't play as much as I would have liked, but I did like the first game. The big change going from the first game to the second is first game was a top-down twin-stick shooter, and the second game is full traditional third person. So bit of a change, big change up there. I know a lot of the older fans were a bit nervous about the change up. It feels great. I really like the way it plays, but they nailed the whole Starship Troopers, silly, like over the top satire, stuff. Like, it's just Starship Troopers with a different name.
I love the promo stuff I've seen of the, like, yeah. It's very funny in that way.
You can name your ship, and they have like tons of like there's, I named mine like Shield of the People, but like.
names are deeply fascist.
Oh, absolutely, and they're just very silly.
I'm gonna give fascists there. This. They can sure name some fucking war machines. Let me tell you.
Yeah, you can make them even more wild.
It's like Warhammer 40K ships. Yeah. It's like fucking.
Yeah. Except somehow less subtle. but Helldivers 2, really fun. It is having some server issues right now, which is unfortunate, as a co-op game, but it's day one, and I think they ended up having a lot more players than they expected, but
good for them.
I'm rooting for it, because, you know, it was a game that really didn't seem to have much traction whenever they showed it before for a while, and, you know, the first game was a kind of a cult hit. It was supported for a really long time by the developers, and it had, a pretty sizable community for a while. And what's also cool about this release is it is launching both on, it is published by PlayStation, and it is launching on PS5 and PC today. The first game had a pretty big PC community. So it's really great that, you know, they're getting to play the game day one. They don't have to wait, 2+ years or something for a port like Sony has been doing with their other projects. And it's also the first of like Sony's live service push, which has been,
last of Sony's live service.
Yeah. I mean, they've got a bit of a great, they got a bit of a graveyard going with that. And, but if this is how they're going to be approaching stuff going forward, like, it actually makes me more like excited about that, because it's priced well. There is monetization, but it's not overbearing at all. The battle pass system that they use does not expire, so it doesn't have, the traditional kind of FOMO stuff that a lot of live service games built on. It's just a well-made, fun game, basically. So I'll talk more about that once I get to put some more time in it and get to actually play with people. Over the past month, I picked up an Xbox. I talked about this a little bit when we were talking about Game of the Year, because the first game I played was Hi-Fi Rush, which I absolutely adored.
I'm gonna play great game. It comes out on Switch.
And I have been just going through kind of a bunch of stuff that I missed. I had only ever played the first two Gears of War games.
Oh.
So, and I had also only played, I played them in like 2011 or something like that. So it's been a while.
Yeah.
So I spent a week Gears maxing. I played Gears 3, 4, 5, and the DLC for 5.
I genuinely love 4 and 5. And anyone who doesn't, I don't trust you.
5? Like, so I liked the previous games. They were fine.
Yeah.
5? 5 is so fucking good. Like, I was so impressed with 5. And it was really cool also to see the progression going through. 5 was fantastic. I had a blast with that game.
Yeah, but 5 doesn't have John DiMaggio going, "My fucking tomatoes!"
Yeah, but... so I spent a week Gears maxing. That was fun. I got the Master Chief Collection and I'm revisiting Halo. I haven't really talked about it too much on the show because I've never actually owned an Xbox of my own before. So this is my first time owning an Xbox. And but I played a ton of Halo in high school and especially college. Like Halo 3 came out a few weeks after my freshman year. And it was like a big cultural thing. I bonded with a lot of people and made a lot of really good friends in college, you know, over
Halo.
I was
shit at Halo and it really pissed me off.
And you know, my roommate that for 3 years in college, you know, I remember before we graduated, he's like, because we had played a bunch of Halo and stuff, but he's like, "Hey, before we graduate, we got to do all the Halo campaigns co-op on Legendary."
Yes.
And we did. And then
that's rough, buddy.
And then after he graduated, I actually flew out to California where he was in grad school and played Halo 4 with him when that came out. So playing Halo again has been really great. I have not played it since that trip where I played Halo 4. Halo Infinite.
Infinite was good, dude. I liked Infinite's campaign.
Can I just point out real quick, Justin, not to interrupt, but I was looking at the stream, and as you were talking about video games and Gears of War here, there was an ad at the bottom of our stream that said, "Gaming too much? Call this number." And
not a real thing.
Not the right podcast, boys.
The gamer hell hotline.
Have you played any video games in the past 2 weeks? Seek help.
See a professional. Justin, please continue.
Yeah, so I played through Halo Infinite. I had a blast with it. And then I picked up the Master Chief Collection, and I replayed ODST and Reach, which are my two favorites, and these replays reminded me just why I love those games so much. And so that was really fun. I'm going through Halo 4 now because I actually have only played it the one time. And that game cleaned up really good in the remaster. So, but I've also been checking out some stuff on Game Pass. I played a little bit of Warhammer 40K Darktide. Cool game. Especially for somebody like me that likes 40K. And so I've been having a blast. And I'm so excited that now I'll be able to play all the, you know, exclusive stuff coming to Xbox that I wouldn't have been able to play before. Anyway, so that brings us to our first topic of the evening, which is Microsoft isn't going to have any exclusives on Xbox.
Microsoft is dead.
So let's talk about this in a less silly way about what's going on. Yeah, let's talk about the actual.
It's been a couple of weeks, and I want to lay out the actual what we have realistically heard. Before we get into like the cringy two online idiots, which to be clear, we are multiple, among
Yeah. Okay. Please. Yeah. No. And we're not going to name any names, but we are going to make fun of weirdos.
Yeah. I think we need to vent and we need to make fun of some entirely two online nerds. But please, like, you don't need to go fucking, you know, these people are trapped in a hell of their own stupid. It's fine.
They're having a rough.
It's actually
time,
deeply sad because they have been fucking inflicted with a status ailment by capitalism. But I'll get into that too. So this started with, what was this, like a month ago? We started hearing that Hi-Fi Rush was going to hit the Nintendo Switch.
Yeah, about a month. Yeah,
couple of weeks, something like that.
It was like throughout January. It started with rumors of Hi-Fi Rush.
Yeah.
And then
people were weird about, which is funny because it's not the first Xbox game to go to Switch. Do people not know both Ori games are on Switch?
Well, but this is the thing, Derek. Like, can I bring this up real quick? Sure. I don't remember this energy for Ori.
There wasn't. Like, and to be clear, the energy was weirder for Hi-Fi Rush, but
I think
it was Starfield that broke it. Right?
Okay. Well, okay, we're going to get to that. Yeah. Like, cuz there has been a serious progression of this. I think the thing about Hi-Fi Rush is Hi-Fi Rush is a very special game. It's a very fun game. It's a very exciting game. And I think it was kind of the first exclusive in a while. From Xbox Game Studios that was only on Xbox, at least for consoles. It's on PC as well, like all of Microsoft's releases. But I do think people felt they were going to be losing a game, you know, like that was the one that a lot of people held on to, especially because Starfield, while it's a good game, sold well, it didn't quite hit the levels that a lot of people,
It's a weird situation because I think that like Hi-Fi Rush feels special, but also a lot of people, and let's be clear, a lot of weird parasocial Xbox fans simply don't view the Switch in the same way that they view the PlayStation in terms of competition, right?
Yeah, that too.
Because like the Ori games, likewise, it was a little weird, but like people didn't make that big of a stink.
Played Ori on Switch.
Right. My wife is playing Ori on Switch. Like, that's just how a lot of people are going to get into that. But
it's a good delivery system for that game.
Yeah. So the next thing that happened was then we got word that Starfield was going to be... fucking doofus.
You are jumping ahead a little bit. So first it started off as like Hi-Fi Rush might be coming to Switch.
Okay.
And then it was, hey, it's coming to Switch and PlayStation. And that was when things kind of really started to take off.
Well, which only makes the earlier point, right? That the energy got weird when PlayStation came into the mix. That people weren't mad about it, a Nintendo port. It was the PlayStation version that pissed people off.
And then there was also the addition of, I think it was Stephen Totilo that was the first one to mention, Sea of Thieves. Which,
that is the one that I was not expecting to see.
Well, I mean but the thing is that one makes sense, I think, for a port because it's 6 years old at this point. It has been supported very well and it has a small dedicated community. Why not get more players?
We are also talking about what is a smaller game to a lot of folks and then a much older service game.
Yeah.
But then it's Starfield, right?
Well, so
there can't be more things in between I've forgotten.
There was actually
an update for Hi-Fi Rush that was like the anniversary update. People data mined it. And hey, there's a bunch of new shirts in here that were for the storefronts that you buy the game on.
That's right. I remember that.
And so there's one for Steam. There's one for the Epic Game Store. There's one for Xbox Live. And then there are two conspicuous blue and red shirts that are in there, both making reference to a surprise appearance. And that was the thing when people went from, are these just rumors? Because Microsoft didn't say anything about this the whole time. And that was the thing that went from, oh no, these aren't just rumors. Like, this is happening.
Yeah. Yeah. Then it's Starfield?
Yes.
Then it's fucking Starfield.
Go, Derek.
So then we get the word that Starfield is going to be coming to... God, I can't look away from this dipshit dog chewing on your thumb. I love her so much. She's got a brain is just tapioca, and I love her.
Yeah, no, there's nothing happening in between these ears, man.
But that Starfield is coming to the PlayStation, you know, in whatever amount of time, probably roughly timed to the release of like DLC, right?
Yeah, it said sometime after the release of the first expansion.
Yeah. So Starfield going multiplat, which is a thing I will point out people argued about a lot anyway, is like after the Bethesda merger, was whether or not these games would stay exclusive and whether or not they would. So I think at this point people are upset, but now it's still just like a, okay, maybe Bethesda games are going timed exclusive, but we're really pissed off about this. At this point, like next,
and
it
then
was,
as the weekend went on,
then it was like Indiana like Jones every, is going to be multi-plat.
But basically every single like Xbox focused site ran a story with a different one of like major Microsoft franchises that this applies to.
Like, I don't know. I'll be totally honest with you guys. I don't know why any of this is a surprise to anyone. I mean, Microsoft has been telegraphing Xbox as a service as opposed to just a box for the past, it seems like, 5 or 6 fucking years.
We'll get into
and
it. We'll get into
this
it.
This was, oh, you want to get down now? Okay.
Mm-hmm, baby. It's because...
Oh my God, Jared, just get down.
I think a lot of people saw the... cause like also one more piece of like note in this is now we've got like the GameStop thing coming out with the Microsoft Game Pass. Like what it's looking like is just, we're looking very likely at a near future where a lot of Microsoft's games are available on more than just Xbox and PC, that they're available on Nintendo and on PlayStation, probably not day and date. We don't really know a lot of details, but none of the examples that have happened so far have been day and date. They're late ports. Game Pass may be coming to other consoles, a thing that's been kind of rumored for a while.
So this is where, so I'm going to partially agree with you on this. I think what you're going to see on other consoles, specifically Switch and PlayStation, is Game Pass. And I think that's how you're going to get your delivery system for games like Halo and Starfield and stuff like, I think it's going to be Game Pass. I don't think that we're going to see, like, maybe for like maybe for Activision Blizzard games, we'll see ports, but for like first party Xbox titles, it's going to be Game Pass. They're not going to just drop Halo on PlayStation. They're not going to just drop, you know, the Halo collection, you know, the Master Chief collection on Switch. They're not going to do that.
I don't think either of the platform holders would let the games only be available through the subscription.
Yeah,
service.
I think you're going to have to release.
If they're porting them, they have to be purchased.
So, at this point, we got
to
talk.
This is
about,
all meaningless speculation, to be fair, because we're like yelling about details that we don't
exactly
know.
It's not exactly speculation, though. We got to talk about what GameStop did the other day.
I already did. You were tied up with the dog.
I was tied up with the dog.
It's okay. But that's
so
the thing.
We have gotten one statement from Microsoft about all this. And it was literally just, we hear you. And they're going to have a business strategy event.
Next week, right?
Next week. We don't even know what day. We don't know what time.
I got to tell you, Justin, I think that was a mistake on their part. I think their messaging has been terrible on this.
I don't think they have any choice but to at this point.
No, but Derek, what I'm saying is they should have had it this week.
I don't think you can set these kind of things up that quickly.
I mean, if it's just dropping Phil in front of his fucking, you know.
I don't think they had all the details. Like, I think these leaks are very clearly coming from people within Microsoft that are trying to figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
I would not be surprised if not everybody is happy about some of these decisions and stuff. And you know, Tom Warren from The Verge had an article saying that they were going to talk about this either end of this month, early next month. And so next week is already them trying to move up the timeline and trying to get everybody on the same page, get all their messaging clear. Stuff like that. I do still think that the messaging is bad because these rumors have been going around for over a month that they just didn't say anything about. They should have been more prepared, but so, I hope they don't wait until like Friday next week and just let things keep boiling.
The sooner they get in front of this, the better, because
so here's what I think. Here's what I think. And I'm going to end this with like, I'm going to end not this topic, but what I'm saying here with a prediction for next week, right? Like I think Xbox's messaging has been fucked ever since the reveal of the Xbox One, all the way back to Don Matrick.
Well, their messaging's been fucked because they haven't known what they're doing. They've had to change direction so often.
They've been very reactionary with a lot of stuff.
And some of that ties into their fan base, and we will come to that. We are going to get to
that. It's coming.
But Microsoft, like Xbox, the Xbox division has been a ship in a storm for the past 6 or 7 years, right? They've crested high waves, and then they've had really low lows, right? There's no coherent strategy. We haven't seen a coherent strategy for Xbox since the reveal of the Xbox One. Like, I think that not that this is all Don Mattrick's fault.
I disagree. But I think when Game Pass was introduced and they started expanding their studios, a strategy became pretty apparent. I think they just expanded way too much.
I think the strategy has been clear for those who wish to see it, but many people have not wished to see it.
I'm gonna push back on you guys, right? What is the strategy behind acquiring, like, Activision Blizzard, for example, and saying these games are going to be exclusive to Xbox, right? Like, Elder Scrolls 6 will be exclusive.
They never said this stuff was going to stay exclusive forever.
No, they did. Yes, they did.
They had their messaging for most, like, all the messaging I can remember is, like, we're going to do what makes sense for each game.
Elder Scrolls, they did explicitly say it was going to be exclusive.
Well,
they,
you know, but guess what? They haven't said Elder Scrolls 6 is coming to PlayStation yet. Yeah, like, we don't know the strategy.
So this is also something I do want to comment on, because they've had, like, and especially when they were going through regulators and stuff for the acquisition of Activision Blizzard, you know, they talked about how everything was a case-by-case basis. And I think that, I hope that when they do, you know, talk about their strategy, they make it clear what the criteria is.
I want, like, details, hey, because right now it's sloppy. But
the thing is, if they don't clarify, if they don't put a fine point on it, then every single thing that they announce, the discussion is just going to be about what platforms it's coming to. They, like, nobody is going to discuss anything but that. If they say, oh, it's still a case by case basis, oh, it's just going to be select games. If they say something like, hey, Bethesda and ABK, big publishers that traditionally worked on other platforms, or hey, you know, we're doing this with live service games, something like that, or just say, hey, everything is going to premiere on Xbox and then come to other platforms later, you know, just make it as clear as they can. But if they say, oh, we're evaluating everything on a case by case basis, it will be a nightmare of messaging, and
I don't think they're going to do that. See, like, I don't think they're going to do that. I think they're going to be like, okay, there's no such thing. And this ties into, I guess we can move into what they're going to talk about next week, which, again, this is all speculation. But I think next week we are going to learn two things. One, that Xbox Game Pass is now Microsoft Game Pass, and it's going to launch on all, you know, on fucking PlayStation 5 and the Switch. And I think it launches on these things next week. I think they drop it the same day. We're also going to learn that Xbox is moving. Maybe not same day, but it's not going to be long. We're also going to learn that Xbox, this is the last true generation of Xbox consoles.
I think we're going to
see a transition towards games as a service for real for Xbox.
So here's the thing, right? First off, like, again, all of this is, everything is hot takes right now, right? Everything is hot takes. And I think that is actually part of what's making the situation worse, is, like, the fact that everybody is going off their own internal headcanon and theories of what's going to happen when we know so little. All we know, right, if we're to take all of the rumors at face value, of which a lot of this stuff and a lot of the reporting, it's not just rumors, there's a lot of reporting. I want to correct myself. If you take all this stuff for truth, Xbox is coming to other consoles, right? Some of the games, probably Game Pass. We don't know the details. We don't know if it's day and date, how late, what games, what. Is it going to be a solid rule by company? We don't know none of those details. I will say this is, Microsoft is going to make a whole fucking lot more money off of these games by putting 100%. Them on other systems.
I mean, combined with How much bigger is the user base between PlayStation and Switch combined, more than just Xbox?
It's huge.
Yeah, no,
it's huge.
No, Xbox is going to make a fucking killing off of this. It's a sound business strategy.
Because they've bought too many studios and too many, like, they bought two massive publishers. And it turns out those publishers required publishing on multiple platforms to make their game successful. And you can't take them and put them on the smallest platform, which Xbox is, and make it profitable. And I think fanboys thought that if you just put everything Microsoft currently is, plus everything Activision Blizzard currently is, and everything Bethesda was pre-acquisition, if you put all that together and say all that's exclusive forever at Xbox, that it will somehow cause Xbox to become more desirable than PlayStation, and everyone's going to buy it instead, and it's going to become the reigning king, and the king will sit on his throne, and God will descend from heaven and declare Xbox the one true king. Like, that's what I think a lot of people expected. The reality is there's not money in that. Because there's also no money in the consoles, right? Xbox hardware, PlayStation hardware doesn't make you money. Game sales do.
Well, and also, like, I think this fall and holiday season was a big test for Xbox. They had several major, major exclusives last year. It was one of the first years that they really had a very strong exclusive lineup. And then they also had huge discounts on hardware and stuff in the fall. And it didn't move the needle much. Yeah. Game Pass did not grow. It was basically flat year over year. They had I bought my Xbox on a huge, huge discount with a gift card. So I paid very little for it. That's the only reason I was able to afford it. And then I paid $1 for a Game Pass trial. Like, they didn't make any money off of this transaction.
Yeah.
But, you know, and that didn't move the needle. And I think that's kind of a wake up call to, hey, we need to do something different before we're in big trouble. And, you know, I mean, obviously this does also come in the wake of 1,900 layoffs in the Microsoft gaming division, mostly focused in ADK, but, you know, it is spread out. And I think they needed to figure out sooner than later how to make a sustainable business. And I think that their pitch is going to be based on that.
Yeah.
I don't see them getting out of hardware anytime soon. I think
it's too easy to slap some PC parts together in a box and call it the next generation Xbox. Like, it's cheaper and easier than ever to just make a new console.
Like, you know? And I think also, I mean, we've seen some huge freakouts, which I want to say I was somebody that was very skeptical when Sony said they were going to start bringing some of their games to PC. I didn't know if that would erode their core business of PlayStation too much for it to be sustainable. That didn't happen.
It turns out we know that it's been very good for them. In fact,
it's been good for them. And PlayStation 5 is selling ahead of PlayStation 4, which already sold crazy huge numbers. So, my whole position on the, especially if it's late ports, I don't think there's anything to be like, if they're just like, hey, these games are going to be Xbox premieres and they come out on Xbox first and they're on Game Pass day one. And you can only do that on Xbox. Like, that's still, and like, it's people that have a library built up on Xbox. Yeah. Like, there's still going to be reasons to play games there.
There's people who act like somebody's going to come door to door and take your Xbox away from you. And it's just like I truly do not see a world where there's not a next generation Xbox that multiplats still come to, that Xbox exclusives are not still exclusive for whatever length of time, 3 months, 6 months, a year before they go to other systems. And people who love Xbox are still going to have that ecosystem to play in. But Microsoft is going to make a shit ton more money by selling games to more people.
I do think, though, that they do need to. This is the one. I know people are concerned about, like, their digital libraries and stuff. And I think this is something that they can easily clarify, that the Xbox store isn't going anywhere. They're still going to be making Xbox hardware, because not a single one of these rumors, even ones that said everything is going to be everywhere, have said that they are going to stop making hardware. And I think like, the one concern people have is losing access to their digital libraries, because people have spent a lot of money in the Xbox ecosystem. It is quite a bit more digital.
And
than
I do
the other
feel
platforms.
I do feel for that, right? Because it sucks to invest that much.
I do absolutely understand that. Like, I have over 500 games on my PlayStation account.
Yeah. I think the dark thing is, like, this is the first time a lot of people outside of Nintendo fans have had to come to terms. Nintendo fans are a different breed of broken down, though. But, like, this is the first time a lot of folks have come to terms with the idea that they've spent money. And because Xbox has generally been better than Sony and Nintendo at this stuff, right? The idea that the stuff they've bought and collected over the years is going away. But, like, that's the digital future, right? You're not buying games. You're buying a license to temporarily play that game as long as it's available. You know, this is why physical games are important. This is why preservation of media is important. Oddly enough,
also, I think high quality PC releases.
Yes, like, because that helps these things stay available.
Something that's wild. Something that's wild that I never thought I'd see. PlayStation actually, now that the stuff has been on PC for a little while, they actually released God of War, Horizon, Uncharted are on GOG, DRM free on PC, which is like that's amazing.
Those games will now never be lost to time. Yeah. You know,
that's amazing from a preservation standpoint.
Oh God, Yosemite Blam in chat brings up Lost Odyssey, right? And like poor preservation media. Like I can't play Lost Odyssey. Like I guess I can get an Xbox and but like. That's a game that needs to be. Here's it. We've spent years, right? This is what's so maddening to me about this conversation, because I guess we're kind of getting into the fanboy shit at this point, right? There's no way around it.
I think now we've kind of said.
Segue. Yeah, but
I
like.
Now we've said what we think about the whole situation. And here's what there is.
We have spent so many years, right, saying how good it would be if the walls of the gardens came down. That these games should be on more systems, right? I do not want to hear Xbox fans losing their shit like they got cheated on by a spouse, right? Over Xbox games going to multiple platforms. When I have had to listen to like Microsoft fans for years talk about wishing they could play Sony and Nintendo games on their platform. Right. If Nintendo came out tomorrow and said we're putting Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom on Xbox, these people would lose their minds. And they should. They should in that situation, because these games becoming available to more people is a thing we all collectively agreed was a good thing for a very long time, because we're not paid by the big corporations. We just want these games available to as many people as possible. Right. If you care about art, you want it to be available and accessible.
Right.
Accessible, not in the accessibility way we talk about, like how we, you know, handle like disabled folks, because as Grant pointed out in chat earlier, Microsoft's actually been pretty rough about that and very inconsistent. But
they were one of the first platform holders to really push for it, which I think caused other people and other publishers to step up.
Yeah. I'll leave other people to say more about that.
That is another thing that they kind of.
I
will tell you what has been consistent is the reaction of people who decided to make a console their entire identity. Because the reactions I have seen to this Xbox news, which we don't even know, and it's important to point out, we don't know anything. Like, this is all speculation. All of it. Everything we have seen tonight is speculation. And because of that speculation, people are having meltdowns and overreactions on the likes of which I'm not sure I've ever seen. So, I mean, I don't know if you guys are aware. I mean, we've lost so many good gamers to this, Derek. We've lost so many. And you know, all because people want to, you know, people want to support their, you know, what is it? Their cuck box or their Microsoft horror station, or like, and these are Xbox fans coming up with these terms.
So
guys,
like, let's
those of us fucking console, like Jesus Christ.
Those of us who have been, whether it's like media or content creation, right? Cause those are different things, but in many ways we, you know, there's a Venn diagram area and we connect together and, you know, we're in a lot of the same groups, right? If you are in media or content creation, you've noticed for a while that the Xbox fan base online has been easily the most like toxic, the loudest, the angriest, the meanest, right?
It's very, I do want to kind of put a point on this because I know people that have been thoroughly harassed by fanboys of every kind.
Sure, absolutely.
Like seriously,
I worked for Nintendo and I dealt with some real gross shit from Nintendo fans. Like,
but there is a very particular type of response that I think Xbox had, and a very specific type of personality that a lot of like the Xbox focused people have. That's very loud and has gone after a lot of journalists. They've gone after a lot of people that I know and care about as well. In a way that I think is distinct from the other fans, which granted being a complete fanboy, don't. It's fine to have preferences and it's fine to be vocal about them. Like I'm fine about that.
I encourage loving art, but not loving corporations. Right.
But no. And that's kind of like that's kind of where we're at. Right. It's like I know people who tie everything they are to art, and I'm not talking about video games. Right. Like not just video. I'm talking about things like, you know, painting or poetry or like, you know,
film, and
that's fine.
I think it's a beautiful thing. If somebody truly is passionate about video games, right, that can be a beautiful thing, but that's so different from being like an Xbox or a Nintendo person.
The thing that I think is kind of different about the Xbox fans is they had like this sense of wanting revenge. And I think especially they basically kind of said this, you know, not even just reading between the lines, but like they wanted to take things away from other platforms. And it wasn't for any other reason than just so Xbox would be successful. Like they didn't really focus on, hey, these are the things that are great about this platform. These are why I like playing games here. Like, I've had a wonderful time playing Gears, Halo, checking out some of the backwards compatibility stuff. Like, there are great reasons to own an Xbox. And a lot of them wanted people to feel forced into wanting to buy an Xbox. Yeah. They wanted to, other people to feel like they were missing out on something. More so than seeing, hey, this is why I want to be here. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah, kind of. So, like, here's the thing, right? Every one of these big three, right? Nintendo, Sony, Microsoft has this. A lot of big corporations do, where the people who consume their products form this cultivated consumer identity, right? Where the act of consumption and the things that they consume become a part of their identity and their personality, and they tie their self-worth to that thing as the primary way that they kind of engage with life itself, right? Which is a dangerous thing to do for your own mental health and your own well-being and sense of identity. The problem is that Microsoft and Xbox executives, unlike any other company in gaming, any other major company in gaming, explicitly supported and encouraged the most aggressive parasocial relationships in the content creator space, right? You had folks like Mike Ibarra hanging out with folks like Mooch and Crap Gamer for a long time, right? Racists and white nationalists, right? Hanging out with people who spend their entire time and identity online harassing folks and engaging in console war bullshit, and hanging out with them and making them feel like friends of Xbox and handing out codes in their chat.
All of those guys posted some very angry and unhinged things.
Yeah.
Alongside pictures of them with Phil Spencer.
Yeah.
So we talk about parasocial relationships a lot, right? And there is a very good reason that suits at Nintendo and suits at Sony don't act like their followers online are their close personal friends. Because when you do that, like for them, take Aaron Greenberg, for example, right? you know, a guy who engaged with some of the worst of his fandom, or the Xbox fandom, right? Made them feel like they were friends. Aaron Greenberg could not tell you any of their names, any of them, but every single one of them feels now like they've got a close and personal relationship with Xbox brass. And what happens when somebody who you rightfully or wrongfully consider to be a friend, somebody that you think you trust, what happens mentally when you feel betrayed? You lash out, you get angry. Now, granted, none of these guys should feel betrayed by Xbox because Xbox is a corporation.
Right. These would be accurate reactions, like, if a close friend or like a partner
betrayed you. And that's my point. These people look at Xbox and the people who lead it as close friends. And that is not, and I'm going to give the, like, and there's a lot of crazy assholes out there, and I'm going to give them this one concession. It's not entirely their fault.
It was encouraged by executives, by people public-facing. Look at all the
excuse the behavior, but,
yeah,
you know, go ahead, Derek.
I was just going to say that, like, all of the, like, look at the Scorpio shit, right? When the Xbox One X, you know, before it was revealed, and all of the fucking Scorpio cult shit was insane. Yeah,
the emojis in their title.
The Scorpio emojis in their Twitter names.
Yeah,
like, do you remember that shit?
And mm-hmm. and I mean, like, if you were around for that time, you remember watching these folks engage with people who were in dangerously unhinged parasocial relationships. And I do wonder too if a part of this has to do with a long, weird, like, facet of the gaming industry, which is that Xbox was the American console.
Yeah.
Right? There's no denying. I mean, if you were around for the launch of the original Xbox and for the Xbox 360, there was definitely a bit of a, like, 1970s dad who doesn't want to buy a Toyota, right, kind of energy to, like, I can get an Xbox.
I remember that around the launch of the Xbox One, Derek, as well.
Derek, do you remember, and this might be news to people in chat, but I know it's not news to you. Do you remember, this was years ago, when that guy called me out for owning a PlayStation and said no self-respecting U.S. military veteran would own a PlayStation?
The Xbox brand became tied in, like, country music, right? It's the same shit. They became the American thing, and anytime people can see something as the American thing, if they have nationalist leanings, right, it becomes very easy to make Xbox the nationalist.
No self-respecting U.S.
console.
Military veteran would choose a Japanese company over Xbox.
That's been I don't think that's at the forefront. I don't think that's the
USA.
Part of most Xbox fans, but that's kind of always been there. And that tied with executives at Xbox hanging out with cannot state this enough, openly racist motherfuckers just because they have large followings and talk about Xbox all the time.
I'll never forget when
fucking Mooch and Crap Gamer
was in those idiots chat rooms during in their chats during their live streams, openly saying racist anti-Japanese shit and just throwing out codes for games.
Yeah.
Like, that will stick with me for a very, very long time.
I mean, and the thing is, like, this is a very mild story. This is a very mild story. This is just a funny story of my experience. But I, you know, I have friends that have been deeply, deeply harassed, and that's not my story to tell. One kind of, and this is just kind of like a glimpse into, like, the mental, like, this whole betrayal mentality, is I remember a few years ago when I was just saying, you know, when Sony was being really, really reticent about crossplay, and I remember being, like, really disappointed. Like, you know, PlayStation was my primary platform; it still is. I really like the platform, but I wanted crossplay because I have a lot of friends that are on Xbox, and I wanted to play with them. And I remember getting a message saying that somebody was disappointed in me as a PlayStation fan for not towing the company line about crossplay and protecting the ecosystem. And like that was when I just knew that I just had nothing in common with these people. Like, because the thing is, like, I've even seen them talking about games that I love deeply, but like, they list off reasons for liking them that are just like basic surface level things. It's not like they connected with it in the same way that I did. It's so weird because even like seeing them talk about what they liked about it didn't even register with me as being like. So it's like, and that's all cranked up on a an even higher level with some of these Xbox fans.
Yeah. I think it's funny because that's actually a really interesting, like, it's not directly connected to what we're talking about, but it's such a good observation and thing to point out, Justin, which is like, so many of these really hardcore console fanboys, right? The people who are like, I'm here to live and die by this brand and no other, right? A lot of times they're, like they're, if they want to talk about art, because games are art, like I bang that drum constantly on this show, right? Games are art, and we should view playing games as engaging with art, right? And when you talk to these people, right, as with many, let's be fair, and you ask them to actually engage with art on a meaningful level, they're incapable of more than surface level, like discussion of like why they enjoyed a thing. Right. And it's because, it's not because they're stupid, right? It's not because they're, you know, look, I'm from fucking Kentucky. I'm not allowed to call anybody stupid, all right? Y'all are lucky I wear my shoes half the time. But it is the same cultivated identity, right, that causes people to view these brands as a part of their personality does turn mindless consumption of that brand into a virtue, right? So it becomes good to just keep eating up everything that gets put in front of you from that brand. And when you view games as content and not art, you're just not going to engage with it in terms of breaking down art, you know? So it's yet another way where the people who are the biggest fanboys, who are being the most embarrassing right now, are actually the least served. They're the ones who are truly suffering for the ways that they have been conditioned to treat this medium. Not as much as the people they fucking harass, but,
no,
you know.
For sure. And like, I guess my question is like, it can some of these people come back from this shit? Like, I'm not sure they can, dude. Like the reactions I've seen have been, I mean, I guess the best word I could use is manic, like a complete detachment from reality. And I know that sounds like I am, you know, exaggerating it. But I'm not. Like, Derek, you've seen some of this shit.
No, I've seen some truly, truly wild things. I mean, again, the comparison to people acting like their spouse cheated on them.
It's accurate.
Is in some cases downplaying some people's reactions. I think there is some... Man, I've just seen some shit. I've seen some shit on Twitter.com that makes me fear for people's mental health.
Well, and like, I am not.
And how
kidding.
Do you come back from that?
Well, here's the thing, Derek. I'm not kidding when I say that I can see some of these people getting fucking violent over this shit.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not kidding. Like again, I don't want it to seem like I'm exaggerating here. But the reactions I've seen, dude, I would be like, if I worked at Microsoft, I'd be fucking concerned.
When human beings lose a piece of their identity, they tend to snap. Right. Not everybody. Right. It depends on how big of a piece of your identity that piece you lost is. Depends on a lot going on, but it's not impossible. Right.
And a lot of these are influencers and content creators. Like they're monetarily wrapped up in this, too.
Yeah.
Like this might be how they make their money. And part of it. And, you know, this is just kind of, you know, a sad case of where we are, like in regards to content creation and relationship with companies and stuff is like. They're possibly even fearing for their livelihood at this point on top of everything. And obviously some of these reactions are wild, but like, I do, you know, if that is something they're worried about, I am, you know, obviously very, very,
cause it's hard to pivot
empathetic to that. Yeah. Like, cause it's, like you basically have to, yeah, you have to like totally change up everything. And so it's just a whole lot of, there are some reasonable concerns, like people that are concerned about digital library if hardware isn't going to be continuing, which again, no rumors about hardware not continuing. There hasn't been a single mention of that.
People jumping the gun.
But so I do understand, you know, some of that, and then some people have heard some of these things, started thinking about it, and then just spiraled from there. And I think, sorry. And you know, if your livelihood is, you know, wrapped up in this, but you're not actually an employee of the company, because, I mean, that's kind of the other thing is, you know, these past few years, I'm somebody that actually really likes, do kind of like how exclusives, you know, tap into specific hardware when they're being built. I like what a lot of first party developers are able to do, you know, have the freedom and budget to do, because, you know, the cost of making an exclusive game and, you know, the economics of it are different than they are for a third party release. You know, their publisher gets the whole amount from the sales of the game. It also advertises the platform. So they could take some more risks, or they can do stuff on a level that other developers just plain can't afford to. However, I do think we are getting to a point where, you know, as sad as I would be to see some of that go, I think we're getting to a point where games are just too expensive to make.
Yeah, we've been seeing that everywhere.
That's another problem. Yeah, I mean, dude, ballooning costs and the fact that these games are taking 8-10 years to develop, like, I mean, it's fucking, it's madness. How long has GTA 6 been in development now for?
Who knows?
I don't even want to think about that.
I mean, fucking hell.
You're not wrong. I don't want to think about that.
Yeah, you know, but like, I think something is going to have to change in the industry to make stuff financially viable, and, you know, so that we don't have to keep having thousands and thousands of layoffs and stuff. And it's like, hey, if there's more money coming in and people are buying and playing games, these companies can keep making games. And I think that's the more important thing.
Yeah.
You know, even if I appreciate certain approaches and some benefits that don't often get discussed when, you know, talking about exclusivity, but and when you are a company that they greatly expanded their first party and then bought two publishers, like, and then all of their games are available day one on Game Pass as well, which also eats into the individual sales and stuff. So I think Microsoft did some math and realized something needs to change, and it needs to change soon. I am very curious to see what the details are going to be. I hope they're clear about them, but I also hope it's successful, because there are some really great games that I don't think have gotten their due because they're on a platform that less people own.
I agree 100%. Yep.
I mean, and I do want to just say to everybody, when Hi-Fi Rush is on a platform that you can play it on,
you should.
I highly recommend checking out that game. It's a game that I think a ton of people are really going to love. It's a really special, fresh game, and it's awesome.
Dude, the fucking boss fight set to Free Radicals.
Oh my god.
The cover of Free Radicals
so
by Flaming
good.
Lips. Free Radicals is like one of my favorite Flaming Lips songs, and I love the Flaming Lips. So I've told the story before, but like the lead up and build up to that song, and I was like, I don't think this is that. And then they do the down out, and I'm like, that reminds me of, but there's no way it is. And then they finally hit that riff, and mm-hmm. I was like, oh fuck yeah, let's go. We're beating up
the Donald Trump lady.
Must
die,
oh my god.
Yeah.
Dude. Yo, Hi-Fi Rush is so fucking good, dog.
It's such a great game, and like, and that one I'm excited for it to come elsewhere.
I want more people to share that joy. It's like, I want Nintendo games on more systems. I truly wish Nintendo would let 5-plus-year-old games hit other consoles. Like, I want to share that. It'll never happen because Nintendo's not cool enough or brave enough to do it. And that's my official stance.
But also, and I just want to comment on this, as somebody who bought an Xbox a month ago, some people are like, wait, are you annoyed by this? And I'm like, no, I'm getting a lot of fun out of this. Plus, I didn't pay much. I didn't pay much for it, so it's been affordable. But like, I've been having a great time playing it, and some of the stuff coming out this year, like Indiana Jones, Hellblade 2, those are games I'm really looking forward to, and I'm gonna play them on my Xbox when they come out, just because other people get to play them, and I'll probably also buy them when they come to other platforms too to have them as part of my library. But it's just kind of a funny running joke, like in our Discord, that every time somebody replays a game, like a remaster or like a major performance patch or a remake or something gets announced, and well, I bought an Xbox and played a bunch of Xbox games, yeah. And now this is happening. So Jeff in particular has been giving me a very hard time about destroying Xbox. So again, this is all my fault, and I'm sorry.
How dare you get an Xbox and cause the fall of Xbox as a brand?
So I have to ask you guys, whatever news drops next week, like all these people who have taken this way too personally, is there any way it makes them feel any better about their situation?
No, because they've already decided that they're going to throw a tantrum, and nothing is going to make them feel better other than an announcement that games are never leaving Xbox. And in fact, all Activision and Blizzard and Bethesda games henceforth will be permanent exclusives. If they don't say that, then their crowd's going to be mad. And the only answer is to say too fucking bad. Because if these people, if these fucking cultists were enough to run your business off of, which is what Microsoft's plan, it feels like for a while, has been, is to appease these fucking weirdos. If that worked, they wouldn't consistently be in last place, right? So, like, it's time to open up to a new wave of potential, like, customers and people who can enjoy the things that you put out, and let that outnumber the fucking vocal online weirdos.
Go ahead, Justin.
Also, I blanked out what I was going to say. Never mind.
I'll grab the baton. I want to make it very clear, and I don't want to come off as like being too cold-hearted here, but I don't feel sorry for basically any of these people because they're all uniformly terrible people. All of the people I have seen reacting like this are some of the worst kind of people who have set harassment mobs on other people for no particular reason.
Yeah.
So I'm not gonna take joy in anyone's suffering. I don't know why you would suffer over something.
Like, this is
so
an intentional
petty,
feature of capitalism and not a bug to create people like this.
Right.
But like, they still made the choice to do that.
Yeah.
So
like, you know, if you told me tomorrow that PlayStation games are going to be available on Nintendo, I'm like, all right.
I want Nintendo games multiplayer. Yeah, and that's as somebody who has never missed a piece of Nintendo hardware. Like,
yeah, I'm like, I don't care.
I owned a Wii U before I worked for Nintendo during the Wii U era.
I feel your pain. I had a Wii U and I was like, man, what do I do with this?
I mentioned earlier, like, I was initially skeptical about what PC ports would do for PlayStation's core business. Turns out it's more successful than ever, and now they also have money coming in and more people can play these games.
I
don't know.
But it also just turns out it's good.
So this is the point I was going to say earlier. Like, also, these guys are still going to buy and play these games.
Yeah, what are they going to do? Not buy the Xbox games and not buy the next box? Of course they will.
Like, these guys absolutely will.
Yeah.
And
it's a bluff.
They absolutely fucking
all this
will.
I'm never going to support Xbox is bullshit. Because what are they going to do? Start buying PlayStations? No. You've built too much of your identity around PlayStation being the literal devil. You fucking
and then
weirdos.
Even if they do, they're still probably going to end up buying these same games just there and then giving them their money anyway. So,
like, I mean,
this sprung a thing in my head that I really want to say too that we haven't gotten to.
Yeah, say it.
I have seen a lot of people doom posting about, oh, Xbox is going to get out of the console race, and that just means that Sony is going to jack up the price of gaming left and right. So, like, first off, you're going to see another Xbox. Like, I just don't believe that this is the last generation of Xbox hardware. But even if Xbox left the hardware space, right? Okay, Sony's absolutely going to charge more for their box without a direct comparable competitor, right, to hold them back. But people are acting like games are going to cost $100, $150 because of this. And it's like, do you think Sony sets the price of video games?
Yeah, Sony like, has, do you think, has to compete
absolutely,
with...
Absolutely, yeah. Derek.
Sony's going to release The Last of Us Part 3 for $150, and Microsoft is going to release Elder Scrolls 6 for $70. Like...
Yeah, like, like they still have to compete with other publishers on their platform, other games on their platform. And they've also said several times, you know, more and more they have to be cognizant of, you know, stuff like streaming services and stuff, taking people's time.
Our good buddy in chat makes a good point. We are talking about U.S. dollars, Canadian dollars. Y'all already fucked.
Yeah, that is very true. Yeah, that is very true. But like they still have to create a compelling product that people want to buy at a price that they can afford in order to sustain their business, because the cut that they get off of every game bought on the platform is important to sustaining their business. They want to be able to get people's time. That's why Sony is also finally starting to get into like live service stuff, on top of like the single player stuff that they do really well, because they want to be able to have people's time as well as their money. They have to be able to create a compelling product. And you know, they have had stuff that, I mean, I'm somebody that likes VR, but doesn't seem like PSVR 2 did very well. And you know, they're not really supporting it all that well. But you know, they're also experimenting with things like the PlayStation Portal, which actually seems to be quite a bit more popular than I would have expected. So I think we'll still see stuff, you know, that matters. And also, like, if Switch is getting more and more ports of things, they'll have to make, you know, a compelling reason why, hey, why would I buy a version that I can't take anywhere versus this one that I could take somewhere? Like, they still have to be able to prove themselves to people that are going to be buying stuff. And, you know, PC is also still a competitor. Steam is still a competitor, and their games are on that. Yeah. Like, so there's still plenty of other things that they need to worry about going on. But I don't see Xbox hardware going away. Even if it becomes less of a focus, I still think it's still going to be there.
Yeah.
Well, lads, do we have anything else?
I think we've talked this one through. I want people to take a breath and calm the fuck down. Because
so do it, I.
Oh, like, oh God, I got one more take. Can I? May okay. I? Please?
No, Derek, please.
I got some fucking spice to drip on this okay. one, all right?
All right, all right.
So here's the deal. I am not the person to say that people are not allowed to care about frivolous things, right? I care a lot about many very frivolous things. However, the severity, right, and the volume with which many, many folks, a great number of folks, have been like furious, like life upending things are happening because Xbox games are coming to the PlayStation as well sometimes. But I know most of your accounts have not said a single goddamn thing about brown children in cages at the border, or a single goddamn thing about Palestine, or about abortion, or about anything that actually fucking matters that's going on right now. Right? I'm not here to do this thing like where we're a video games podcast and I want to pretend you can't care about shit going on in video games. Right? Or the layoffs. Good point, Errol in chat. Right? Like, most of these folks, this is the angriest they will fucking be about a subject. And none of that same heat is being brought to the shit that matters, that is truly ruining the lives of people worldwide, right? Much less like their home country. And it's again, these deeply unserious people. I'm not asking people, I'm not sitting here telling you that you've got to make a tweet about how you're mad about Xbox and then follow up in a response with like, by the way, I am actually more mad about abortion access. Like, I'm not doing that, because that is deeply stupid behavior. But I just know most of these folks don't give a shit.
Of course not.
So eat shit. Find better things to be upset about with your life. That's the last thing.
Let's we'll go ahead and wrap this shit show up.
Yeah, we will. I got a few housekeeping notes.
Derek, why don't you do some, Derek, do some housekeeping.
Yeah. So, first of all, a reminder that you can support us either with subscriptions here on Twitch or by throwing money to us on Patreon. All of our content is free. None of us take any of your money. However, the money that you do decide voluntarily to give us helps us replace busted equipment and helps us do things like go to PAX, right? Meet up for charity events, things like that. So greatly appreciate anything you can throw our way, but it's not mandatory. Reminder to join the Discord if you have not. It is a heavily moderated space that is intended to be a safe spot for folks of all different types, all different walks of life. We've got moderators that come from across, you know, all different types. It's almost, what is it, almost or over 400 people?
I believe it's over at this point.
I think we're around 400. It's a lot of folks in there. But it's a good safe space. It's not free of discourse. Nothing is free of discourse. We've learned, especially over the last month, nothing can be free of fucking discourse. But that's what happens when you put people together.
Unfortunately, you're correct. Yes.
That's what happens when you put people together. But guess what? If somebody comes in and says some shit that's about types of folks, they're fucking gone, right? Another thing is, while it is on the wait list, right, our panel was not our panel on the Best Boys of Final Fantasy was not approved.
I still think it's gonna go. I still
it
think
might.
It's
Here's the thing: it's on the wait list, which means I still need to make the panel in case it gets approved. Which means I need your help. So here in the chat, I have dropped the second wave. Many of you took part in the first wave of the qualifier round, and I greatly appreciate that. This is the real deal. You are selecting the 10 best boys of Final Fantasy, and in fact, selecting the bestest boy to give them bonus points.
Am I one of the best boys on the list?
No, you're not, because you are not a fictional character, even if many people wish you were. but please, please take part in the second round of voting for the best boys of Final Fantasy, because if our panel gets approved, I'm going to fucking need that data. Yeah.
Oh,
oh no, I gotta make this today.
Watch so. This shit get fully approved a week before.
No, it's gonna be like, no, they're gonna give us a hey, can you guys do this afternoon?
Good news, I will already have the PowerPoint ready.
Yeah. Like, okay, we just gotta go hunt down Ben. Somebody find
Ben.
Yeah,
right. That's all our housekeeping. On the 22nd, a friend of the show and award-winning games journalist Reb Valentine is going to be coming back on February 22nd.
But she was just on a few weeks ago.
I know, and it's incredible. She's going to be back, and we're going to be talking about as was slyly hinted to us, but we didn't realize it before, to talk about the new IGN union, which I am super excited for.
Speaking of... if you guys hadn't heard about that, they do have a petition out to help compel Ziff Davis, the owners of IGN, to recognize their union. If you could just take 10 seconds to sign it. It literally takes like 10 seconds.
Just look
seconds.
Up the IGN Creators Guild, take 10 seconds to sign it, help put a little weight behind making this easier, because they can make it hard for Ziff Davis, but maybe we can convince Ziff Davis to do this the easy way. Just remember that like unions would be the single most feasible and viable option to improving a lot of the issues we face currently in journalism and in development. So please do so. But Reb will be on the 22nd to talk about it one way or another.
Ooh.
Think that's all we got.
All right. Well, with that, everyone, remember, take care of each other. We definitely appreciate everyone in the chat tonight. And as always, kindness costs nothing. And I want to emphasize that. Costs nothing. So be kind to one another.
I don't appreciate no one.